I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, are there tensions between the San Antonio City Council and the new mayor, Gina Ortiz Jones? Jones is shaking things up in a way that some on council are calling a power grab. We're going to hear from District 10 council member Mark White. And later on The Source, as the effects of climate change intensify, the cost of everything from electric bills to insurance premiums to your groceries are expected to go up. And those costs under the Trump administration climate policies are spiking even higher. How can consumers advocate for environmental policies that result in lower cost while addressing the needs of climate change? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is Ashley Alvarado, President and CEO of Texas Public Radio. The recent defunding of public media was a serious blow to TPR and stations across the country. But when we turned to you, you rose to the challenge, and your response was extraordinary. Thanks to your generosity, our emergency fundraising drive was a powerful reminder of the strength of our community. You showed just how deeply you value independent journalism, classical music, and the role TPR plays in bringing us together. Defunded? Yes. Defeated? Never. But our work is far from over. You can still give at tpr.org/resiliency, and every gift strengthens our future. Thank you for being the heart and the hope of TPR.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Later, we're going to be hearing about how the Trump administration's energy policies and the impact that they're having on household budgets. But first, there's a new mayor in town, Gina Ortiz Jones, and some on city council are wondering if she's making a power play. Jones has moved to restructure how council members initiate policy, introducing new legal review steps and requiring coordination with her office. But dissenting council members are seeing it as an overstep of her authority. We're now joined by District 10 Councilmember Mark White to find out more. Councilmember White, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So how do things usually work, or how do they work before, and what's changed?
So you'll recall that it was just a year and a half ago or so where we amended the CCR process really to
okay, CCR process. Okay, yeah. I don't understand the jargon. I don't do
that. That's right. Let me back up. A CCR is a council consideration request. It is how we as council members initiate new policy ideas. We're in our districts every single day hearing from residents about the day-to-day problems that they're facing. And it's our job to then go back, work with each other, and try to find solutions to these problems. Once we have four others that agree on a potential policy solution, we can draft and file a council consideration request that seeks to then have the full council look at and debate the new policy idea. So to be clear, this is not like any council member can just go get one or two sign-offs and off you go. We need five council members to sign a CCR. That's almost half the council. Then what we have to do under the current ordinance is notify the city manager that we are filing the CCR, and then we can file it. A year and a half ago, we recognized the process was broken. CCRs were stacking up in the mayor's office. They weren't moving like they should.
They were sitting on them.
That's right. And so I worked with Mayor Nuremberg, our city attorney, our city manager. We outlined potential changes to the process. We then had a full council discussion on the proposed amendments. Then we got up on the dais. We voted. We amended the CCR ordinance to what we have now. And it has worked really, really well over the past year. CCRs are moving. New policies are being put into place. And we're solving a lot of the resident issues. Now, our new mayor wants to change the CCR process, which, listen, if we can make it more efficient and we can make it better, more than willing to work with the new mayor on this, that would be great. But what we have to do is follow the proper procedure. We have a valid ordinance in place. If the mayor wants to put forth recommendations to change the ordinance, please do that. Let's debate them as a council, and then let's vote on changing the ordinance if that's what council wants to do.
So the change is before you a council member can take it to gather the four other signatures, they have to go to the city manager and the city attorney?
So the changes the mayor wants are approval sign-off from city manager, then sign-off from the city attorney, and then, and perhaps again most concerningly, then coordination with her office on the CCR. Listen, if we want to coordinate with the mayor's office, we most definitely can do that, but we shouldn't be required to do it. And most importantly, this is about transparency. We cannot have unelected folks, city manager, city attorney.
Yeah, they work for you.
The mayor's chief of staff. They work for city council. They should not be allowed to kill a policy idea that council members believe in before it even gets to the council to be discussed. That's not right.
Right. So, and I just want to get to the, you know, look at it in a way. So if there are probably some policies that maybe Mayor Jones doesn't want to see to come up to the dais and be voted on. And so would this be a way for her to kind of keep those policies from even being considered?
Yeah, that was one of our concerns, right? All the CCRs that are put forth, she may not love all the ideas in there, right? But again, it's not for the mayor, who's one of 11 council members, right? We all have an equal voice and equal vote. It's not for the mayor to be able to kill one of those herself. The entire council needs to be given an opportunity to share their voice and to share their residents' concerns or approval of the proposed idea.
And Mark, you're not the only person on city council who is raising concerns. Terry Castillo in District 5, I'm sure you guys don't always see eye to eye on policies, but this is something that you have decided is not a good idea.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up, because that really shows this is not about politics here, right? You have Terry, who's on the very, very left end of the political spectrum. You have Marina Aldrete Gavito from District 7, who's sort of in the center left type position, and then me that's over on the right. And there's other council members that are concerned as well. So this has nothing to do with politics. This is just about good government.
So what happens now?
Well, we are waiting to see if the mayor will call the meeting as we have requested, call a meeting of the entire council to discuss the process or the proposed changes that she would like. Hopefully she will do that. If she doesn't do that, then we've just got a couple of options as a council. We can, three of us can do a three-signature memo where we schedule the meeting ourselves. There's potential for lawsuits, you know, if the mayor wants to try to mandate these changes and violate the ordinance that's already in place. But again, hopefully we're not going to get to all that. We're just asking for the mayor to collaborate with us so we can discuss her recommendations.
Do you think this is just growing pains, you know, to bring new mayor, new you know?
Yeah, a little bit, sure. You know, the mayor hasn't been around City Hall, right? And you know, she hasn't seen this CCR process and how it's worked so well over the last year. So hopefully it is, and she'll get in there, settle in a bit. And then again, just work with us on this stuff. We don't need to do things by memo or mandate. Talk to us. Let's figure it out.
All right. I want to ask you about something else. We had a city council person, a District 8 council member, Evelise Meza Gonzalez. She was arrested for driving while intoxicated, according to police recently last week. And so I just want to ask, what advice, because you've gone through this yourself, you've seen how this happens, what advice would you have for her in order to move forward, regain trust, keep working as an elected member of council?
Well, first of all, I've enjoyed getting to know Evelise over the past couple months since she's been elected. She's seems like her heart's in the right place, and she's going to work hard for the residents of District 8. With regard to what happened last week, I don't know all the details. I think we need to let the legal process play out, figure out exactly what happened there.
But you got through it. You did not have to resign.
Well, no, and Evelise will not have to either. You know, she hasn't asked for my advice, but I would just say, listen, the important thing is to, number one, if you made a mistake, acknowledge it. And then you, again, let the legal process play out, and then come back and just work as hard as you can for your constituents. I know that's what the District 8 residents want. They elected her to be their representative. She you know, made a mistake, it looks like, last week. But again, she's a good person. I know she wants to work hard for District 8, so acknowledge it. Take whatever steps you can moving forward to, again, say that it's wrong. Be in the community and let them know that you're contrite, that it will not happen again, and then go forward and work as hard as you can for the people.
Mark White, District 10 City Council Member, thank you so much for coming in the studio and talking to us today. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from the break, Trump's energy policies and your household budget. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. When Donald Trump was running for office, running for president in 2024, he said he would lower prices, he would lower grocery bills, he would beat inflation by unleashing America's energy potential by drill, baby, drill. That was his phrase, drill, baby, drill. Then he was elected, and on his first day in office, he signed an executive order which declared an energy emergency for the nation that allowed him to cut regulations for the oil industry. And then on July 4th, Donald Trump signed into law the Big Beautiful Bill, which hit hard on green energy, renewable energy infrastructure, and also, again, was a way to help the fossil fuel industry. So what is that going to do to our household budget? Will this actually accomplish what Donald Trump said he was trying to do, which is to lower prices and unleash America's energy potential? We're now joined by David Kiva. He is the president of the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund Action. Yeah, and he's previously served at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. And so, David Kiva, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. I'm honored to be here.
So, first off, Donald Trump said he was going to unleash America's energy potential, drill, baby, drill. We're seeing actually really low gas prices right now. They're 10% lower than they were a year ago. So, are we seeing those policies in action?
No, the short answer is no. I don't think any of the policies that Donald Trump has pursued over those first 6 months in office have anything to do with current gas prices that consumers are seeing and paying at the pump.
That's mainly due to international issues. Is that what's causing the price of oil to actually be kind of low right now?
Well, it's in large part because decisions that you make today lead to the amount of oil that is drilled, 12 months, 18 months down the road. We don't have more capacity today than we had before Donald Trump took office. America was producing more oil and gas during the prior term than at any other point in the nation's history and more than any other nation in the world. I think if you want to achieve energy independence, the best way to do that is by producing clean energy here at home, as Texas has been doing for quite some time, because oil and gas is always going to be a commodity that's traded on an international market that is subject to price shocks caused by foreign actors who may or may not have our nation's interests at heart.
So that point that the United States under President Biden was producing more oil at that time than any time in history. I mean, it was a boom period for jobs in the oil industry. There was a lot going on. That seems to be undercut frequently by the rhetoric we get from Donald Trump.
Well, all of President Trump's rhetoric says effectively that things were so awful before and things are so great now. Unfortunately, as Americans look at their own bills and take a look around and do their own research and learn the facts for themselves, that rhetoric doesn't match reality.
So we now have these policies from Donald Trump where he is put into place a rollback of clean energy initiatives. How do you say this? Give us the broad view. We'll drill, baby drill on those answers. So how is that going to affect household utility bills?
It's not going to be good. Every American is going to experience higher prices. Our communities are going to have fewer jobs. We're going to have less reliable energy. It's going to be harder to buy a home, and sometimes it's going to be impossible to insure those homes. Those are not outcomes that will be popular with not just many Americans. I don't know any American of any political leaning who would be for those outcomes, but that's exactly what we're going to see from the policies that this administration seems intent on pursuing.
All right, so connect the dots for me. How is a rollback on clean energy, is that going to affect the household bills? I mean, you know, I mean, how does that line up?
Sure. Well, I was just reminded that Governor Abbott is fond of saying that Texas has added more new capacity to its energy system than any other state since Winter Storm Uri hit. That's true. What sometimes goes unmentioned is the fact that 90% of that new energy capacity has come from renewable sources. So taking measures to punish renewable energy or to make it more expensive by taking away tax credits, someone ultimately is going to have to pay for that, and that ultimately will be ratepayers. So I think what we're going to find ourselves with is less energy being produced that costs more, and your listeners are going to wind up carrying the brunt of that every single month as they take a look at their energy bills.
Our phone lines are open, listeners, since he mentioned you. Let's get you in the conversation. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you concerned about the Trump energy policies, the impact it could have on your household budget, also on the reliability of the grid? And let's not forget, we're dealing with the climate catastrophe. More natural disasters, more drought, more floods, just more hurricanes, all sorts of bad things, not just here, but around the world. Anyone who is concerned about trying to address climate change, this is not your president who's going to do that. So let's talk about that point, David. So you're the EDF. Why aren't you focusing on the climate issue? Do you think that it communicates better to talk about prices?
We're focused on what we understand the American people care about. And we recently commissioned some polling. It came out just as Congress was sending what President Trump has called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act to his desk. We didn't get the data back and the findings back in time to win hearts and minds and get members of Congress who ultimately voted for it to vote the other way, which is unfortunate, but it was really instructive. And what the polling said was that the things that were included within this big budget bill that President Trump pushed are really powerfully unpopular, not just cuts to Medicaid and cuts to health care, which are opposed by 81% of swing voters, but also the changes that they're making within the clean energy space. We were sort of pleasantly surprised to learn that eliminating the requirement that oil and gas companies pay a fee when they emit methane pollution, basically wasting methane, it's not going into anyone's energy, it's just being emitted into the atmosphere where it's a super pollutant, was opposed by 62% of voters overall and by 65% of swing voters. So I've always believed in talking about what the American people care most about, but it's clear, as you've mentioned, that we are living in a time of more extreme weather events. And unfortunately, Texas has borne more than its fair share of those. And is living with the economic consequences, but also the devastating heartbreak that accompanies it.
Right. Studies show that Texas has the most and the most expensive weather disasters than any state, even Florida, which I was surprised to find out. It's because we have to also factor in other things like the wildfires that Texas deals with. So it should be an issue that Texans are thinking about as a local issue. Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Monty. And Monty, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody that voted for him. They're getting what they voted for, and they shouldn't complain too much. They do what they voted and getting what they voted for, and that's what they're getting now.
All right, Monty, thank you for the call. So Trump says he is going to lower household budgets. A lot of people voted for his, you know, because the price of eggs, this, that, the other thing at the grocery store is going up. And he said he would address that by unleashing America's energy potential. So, but is that happening? We're still seeing inflation. You know, eggs have gone down, but it was not caused by inflation. It was caused by constrictions in the supply chain due to bird flu and other issues. But so what's happening there? Did people get what they voted for, David?
No, I think what the American people expressed was a great concern and unease with inflation and with the fact that things cost too much in their lives. What we're seeing from this president are policies that not only fail to address that, but that push us in the wrong direction, especially as it relates to energy prices and also the cost of purchasing insurance, which is directly attributable to the increase in the likelihood of extreme weather events.
So, but they're saying that if energy goes up, that is an inflationary force because it drives up the price of everything. You know, if you've got to refrigerate meat or if you've got to move things around, it is something that adds to, and it compounds and it creates an inflationary force. So isn't that to be considered?
Absolutely. And look, I mean, inflation is just a fancy word for how much things cost. And your energy bills are a key component of what you pay on a daily or monthly or annual basis. And the fact that our friends at an outfit called Energy Innovation have found that Texans are going to pay more than just about any other residents of just about any other state in terms of having higher costs, $220 a year every single year in just a couple of years, and by 2040, as much as $480 more per year on their annual energy bills. That's real money. And that's money that Texans, I'm sure, would rather spend filling other needs or perhaps even doing something fun of their choosing.
Right. So in Trump's immediate executive action that he took on energy, declaring a national energy emergency, and he signed executive orders aimed at boosting fossil fuel production, expediting permitting, and rolling back greenhouse gas and infrastructure regulations. You're saying that is, you know, that's what people voted for. He told them he was going to do that. He said he laid that out specifically.
He did lay out that he intended to, as you mentioned in the open, to drill, baby, drill. I think the onus is on folks like me, and it's why I'm grateful to have an opportunity on your program to talk about it, to provide a little bit of context and share with your listeners what the policies he's pursuing will actually mean in terms of their lives. And I don't think over time they're going to lead to lower overall energy prices. I think, unfortunately, they're going to lead to America being less competitive and having fewer jobs.
America first, though, right?
Well, look, I'm a proud American. I've worked in American politics for a really, really long time.
He calls it an America first policy, you know, and but it has the potential of making America last in the world. As the rest of the world continues to move forward with clean energy production.
I think that's exactly right. And I think what it's doing is really abdicating an opportunity for America to provide leadership to the rest of the world. And I think it's pretty sad.
I mean, but it's you know, what it comes down to is, you know, all the clean energy jobs are not going to be there anymore, you know, and they're going to be elsewhere in the world. If China is more aggressive and more competitive and more innovative, and they're able to build up the infrastructure and be able to generate cheap, clean energy, and America is not, you know, we'll talk about this coming back, but where does that leave the nation?
It leads us in a worse position. And there was an element of the budget bill that the president just signed that leads to, you know, doesn't do anything to disabuse folks of the cynicism that Americans feel about our politics today.
All right, I got to take a break here, though. David Kiva is going to stick with us, president of the EDF Action, talking about clean energy policies. What's it going to do to our economy, your household budget, and America's competitive future? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. He campaigned on providing an aggressive stance on energy. When Donald Trump talks about energy, he's talking about fossil fuels. He does not include renewable energy, wind, solar, into that mix. He did pursue an aggressive deregulation plan and expanded fossil fuel drilling, drill baby drill, aligned with his campaign promise. But the economic outcome right now is a mixed bag. Short-term oil and gas production gains and price softening did materialize, but that's mainly due to external market factors, things happening around the world. That's according to oil experts. Long-term trends likely favor higher consumer and industrial energy cost, fewer incentives for clean energy, and reduced climate resilience opportunities are now in place in the United States. And the cost burden is expected to weigh especially hard on the working and middle-class households through higher utility bills, increased volatility in the energy markets, higher prices for insurance, and higher grocery bills. So how did we get here? And is there an off-ramp? Is there a correction that can be made? That's up to voters, but we're just talking about it right now. We're joined by David Kiva. He is the president of the EDF Action. So, David, one thing Trump talked about he wanted to do was he wanted to revive the coal industry in the United States. He wants coal to be huge again. We have seen actually the continued reduction of the demand for coal, not just in the United States, but around the world. And even a lot of the coal mined in the United States is exported. And that is slowing down mainly because of Trump's tariffs policies. What is the future of coal in your view?
The future of coal, I think, is going to be determined by market forces and the fact that clean energy, energy like from wind and the sun, is considerably cheaper today to produce than coal is. And coal has really significant negative impacts. It's about the dirtiest fuel you could possibly burn, with significant air pollution issues, as well as the greenhouse gas emission that it produces. So if coal isn't a good thing to burn for people's health or for the health of the planet, and it costs a lot more money, I'm not sure why we would prioritize doing it. But that's exactly what this president is doing. And one thing that just before the break, it's a little bit technical, but that I was starting to get into, was tucked within the president's budget bill was a tax credit for something called metallurgical coal. Now, most of the metallurgical coal that is produced here in the United States is not actually used here. It's exported to foreign countries, mostly India and China, and used in the production of their steel. So it's a really curious thing, because what we're doing is asking the American taxpayers to pay to effectively subsidize foreign steel, which, you know, we were talking and joking a little bit before about America First. That certainly does not sound like an America First policy. It's of no use to American taxpayers and will not make America more competitive vis-a-vis any other country anywhere.
But Donald Trump has talked about clean coal, that he is supportive of clean coal. What is that?
I think in President Trump's mind, if he says something is clean, it makes it clean. You know, there is no truly clean coal. Burning coal emits greenhouse gases and pollutants into our atmosphere, which makes people sick and heats our planet faster.
So how might Trump's plan on his energy policies, how could that affect the grid reliability and also impact the cost for electricity in rural areas?
I think what we were seeing was that the grid was getting more reliable. In Texas, which, as you know, has a different setup and a different system through ERCOT than just about any place else within the United States. I was just talking to one of our Austin-based experts before I joined this call, try to get a little bit smarter and better informed. He reminded me that in Texas, there's no longer a worry about reliability during summer peak when energy demand is at its absolute highest. That's because of the renewable energy that has been brought onto the grid in recent years. We're not perfect, but we've had a number of success stories in recent years, including in Texas with the bringing new renewable energy and new storage onto the grid. I'm worried that the policies that this president is pursuing are intended to stop that. And if we stop it, we can go back to rolling summertime blackouts when people need to have their air conditioning on the most.
Well, I mean, because we're also seeing an increase in demand for electricity, mainly from server farms, crypto mining, AI facilities, all sorts of, then these take a lot of power. And so they're saying that the needs for the Texas grid will double by the end of this decade, in 5 years, because of all of this, these new demands on the grid. So there's a lot of new power generation that needs to be installed right now.
That's exactly right. And because of that, it's confusing or alarming or upsetting or all of the above that the policies that this administration would be pursuing.
Because they are, the administration is pursuing, is pushing for crypto. You know, he signed the stablecoin bill into law. There's going to be more crypto for that. He's also not regulating AI. And so that's still, you know, happening at an incredible pace, which is good in, you know, in a lot of ways, but also, you know, we have to recognize the energy demands on that. And so there's a lot of growth happening that doesn't create a lot of jobs, but it does take a lot of energy.
That's right. And when you've got increasing demand, why you would go out of your way to try to punish the sources of energy that are most scalable and most affordable doesn't seem like it's in the interests of Texans or the American people more broadly.
Well, Senator Durbin has called it a quid pro quo for the president. He said that the oil industry, coal industry, fossil fuels have gave Trump billions of, you know, a lot of money during his campaign, and now they did it with this in mind.
Yeah, and that's fair for Senator Durbin to say. I'm most focused on the intent. I can't tell you that it's for any particular reason, but what this president and his administration seem dedicated towards doing is punishing clean energy and promoting dirtier energy as best they possibly can.
Well, looking at rural Texas and rural America, a lot of these jobs for clean energy are in rural areas. We need people who can, you know, help maintain the wind farms, who can maintain a lot of the solar farms and the energy storage. There are a lot of good jobs there that are going away.
Yes, that's absolutely right. If I might pivot for just a second,
sure.
Because I worry a little bit that some of this conversation might be a little depressing for some folks, I wanted to take an opportunity to lift up one piece of good news. That's that this past legislative session, the Texas legislature, with bipartisan support, passed a law placing a time limit on how long you can idle an oil and gas well. One of the things that the Environmental Defense Fund has been working on for a very, very long time is promoting policies that would plug orphaned oil and gas wells, including throughout rural areas in Texas. EDF has really sort of been at the forefront of this.
So they're polluting water, all sorts of things. But, you know, when we hear people like Trump complaining about wind farms and solar farms and these things, and they act like the petroleum industry is benign in its own environmental cost and, you know, lack of attractiveness to the countryside. And he says, oh, those ugly wind farms, as if, you know, a fracking site is so beautiful.
There is a certain incongruity to that worldview and that belief. But I mean, my point on the orphan wells was every place where there's an orphan well, there's an opportunity for someone to go and plug it. That's a job that is innately dispersed throughout the oil patch and can go to some well-trained folks who can earn a very decent living by doing it. And it creates a huge community benefit. It creates a climate benefit because of the emissions that are stopped at the source, leads to cleaner air, less sickness, and leads to stopping something leaking into the atmosphere that serves no public good whatsoever. So I was pleased to see that the Texas legislature took steps to address that and wanted to highlight that because that's been an area of focus for the Environmental Defense Fund for a very long time.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take another break here. We're going to come back talking about how these rollbacks on clean energy, the impact it has on public health, local environments, and the global environment. We want to hear your observations, your concerns. Give us a call, your questions, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and the source will come back in about a minute. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Consumers in Texas could expect to pay about $600 extra a year for their energy bill by 2035. That's according to the Center for American Progress, as people are looking at what's in this one big beautiful bill that Donald Trump signed on July 4th. There's a lot in this bill, which is not good for people who support clean, renewable energy. But if you like to support the oil industry, well, then you just had a big happy day when that bill was signed. We're going to talk more right now with David Kiva, the president of the Environmental Defense Fund Action, about what does this mean, though, for public health? You know, what are your concerns there?
Well, first of all, I mean, we covered some of this earlier in the hour, but Texas is unfortunately leading the nation in the number of billion-dollar climate and weather-related events, with 171 of them since 1980. With the majority of those coming in recent years, we've seen a steady escalation in the intensity and damage caused by extreme weather events. That is a public health threat, and it's a threat that is not dispersed evenly. Texans are subject not just to the threat from hurricanes and along the Texas Gulf Coast, but also subject to drought and extreme heat and to wildfire damage as well. So Texas is absolutely borne more than its share of climate and weather, extreme weather events, that is a threat to public health. But then there's also the threat posed by dirty air, dirty water. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids potentially getting asthma when our air gets cleaner. Some of those risks go away. People live longer, healthier lives and are able to be outdoors more often.
Let's go to a caller, Carlos. Carlos, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment that when we look at Donald Trump's resume, we can see he's made a lot of promises and not deliveries of any projects in the past. So unfortunately, we shouldn't be surprised now as a president, he's making promises and talking about projects that he will never deliver. And we're going to end up paying the price for it.
All right, Carlos, thank you for that call. So, but he is delivering on the promises that he made to the oil industry when he was campaigning, isn't he, David?
Well, he certainly seems to be in the short term in terms of lifting up oil and gas and coal and attempting to punish clean energy industries. I expect they are pleased with what they've seen out of his administration, especially in terms of the favorable tax treatment that they received in the budget bill that just reached the president's desk.
Another caller, Gloria. And Gloria, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to go back on the discussion on the reliability of the electric grid. And my understanding is absolutely the renewable energy has helped us tremendously in keeping the grid sustainable. But also my understanding is that the state of Texas makes these huge amount of payments to businesses to stop using electricity when the grid starts to become stressed. So my question is, one, is that an accurate statement? And two, if it is, where do we see that money we're paying to businesses on our electric bills?
All right, Gloria, thank you for that. David Kiva, so there are crypto miners that shut down when the energy grid is being stressed in Texas, and then they get paid quite a bit for doing that, millions and millions of dollars. And so can you answer Gloria's question about that?
Yeah, I think any ratepayer should have concerns about that practice. And I think a more reliable grid to all of us where there's no risk of summer blackouts and you don't need to provide incentives to any energy user to stop using energy is a better place to be. And I think we can get there with more clean energy.
Well, also the administration is reversing 12 established energy efficiency standards. Which previously has saved consumers billions of dollars in consumer cost. So, you know, we always talk about the best watt is the one that's not generated, you know, because we're able to have efficiency built in the system as a consumer, whether you're able to purchase utilities, you know, a good refrigerator that conserves power and things like that. So where is that in this mix?
I think it fits within the broader context of a president whose worldview seems to be that burning of more fossil fuels is a positive or virtuous thing to be pursued for its own end. Getting rid of efficiency standards that have worked for a really long time, that have provided some clarity to the American people about what they can expect their energy costs to be over a set period of time from using a particular appliance isn't a thing that makes a whole lot of sense and won't lead to better outcomes or lower bills.
Another caller, David. And David, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if your guests had any information about what the economic impact is going to be for people moving out of Texas as a result of these increased energy costs and climate crisis and these adverse energy policies from this administration. I myself actually am in the middle of moving my family to the East Coast, precisely in part at least because of this issue.
All right, David, thank you for that and good luck to you. So climate migration, people leaving Texas, it's so hot and all these other stressors and natural disasters. David Kiva, what about the cost of that?
Yeah, it's a lot of Davids on in one broadcast. I wish your caller luck with his move. I'm not quite sure. You know, he asked whether or not I have any specific facts or figures related to the cost of people choosing to leave a state like Texas because of climate change. I do not. So I hate to let him down on that front, but wish him well with his move.
I mean, well, Texas continues to be a high growth state. A lot of people move here and then they see how hot it is. And sometimes they move back to where they came from. So, you know, are we seeing, you know, the cutting of vehicle emission standards, you know, that's going to impact public health. That's going to impact also your household budget as, you know, they're going to make people pay more an annual fee to have an electric vehicle. It just doesn't make sense now if you're thinking that an EV is going to save you on your gas bill. Now they're going to charge you for having an EV. I mean, is that going to hurt?
Absolutely. And look, I believe, and it's not just me, that the head of the major trade association representing the automobile industry in the United States has said this, that the future is electric. I believe that electric cars, trucks, and SUVs are the future in this country, not because of government mandate, but because they win out on performance. They cost less to operate over time.
So much more reliable.
Yes, they perform better, they break down less, and will be more desirable in every way. Like what I spent a fair amount of time talking about this issue, and what I've always encouraged folks is, listen, if you're not sure about electric vehicles and if they're right for you, do two things. One is take one for a test drive, and two is talk to someone who owns one. So trying to provide disincentive for adoption of more electric vehicles, it'll certainly hurt the economy of a state like Texas, where last I checked, Tesla is now headquartered and is a major employer. You know, perhaps the most familiar electric car manufacturer to any American in the country is deep roots in Texas. So,
sure. I'm going to go to the caller before I run out of time. I want to give Anthony a chance to jump on the air here. Hey, Anthony, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Okay.
I have a comment. So it's y'all talked about earlier about Trump's drill, baby, drill, and going into Alaska. I have some experience working in the oil fields here in Texas, and it's my understanding that there's plenty of oil here, Oklahoma, up in the Dakotas, what have you. Is the need to seek the leases in Alaska to appease the oil companies that contributed to his election? What's your take?
All right, Anthony. So do we really need to be drilling in Alaska? Is that something that needs to happen? I know a lot of these leases that Trump is pushing for oil development are not even being taken up. David Kiva.
My view is no. But my view as well of where progress might come from in a state like Texas is it's got to be an all of the above solution with all stakeholders at the table. Those are the types of solutions that the Environmental Defense Fund has worked on in a state like Texas for a really, really long time, and we will continue to do. But I believe that the clean energy future is coming. I believe it benefits everyone, including Texans, in really concrete, measurable ways, including costs, more access to good paying jobs in clean energy, less pollution, and a more stable, more livable climate. So I truly think we can.
But these policies are in place are slowing that down, and we're in a race against climate change. So You know, that's a lot to consider. David Kiva is president of the Environmental Defense Fund Action. Thank you so much, David, for coming on the air today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me, David.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.